Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Life Coach Radio Network. I'm David Frank Gomes, and thanks for joining me on Frank Talk, the radio show about the art and science of a meaningful, happy life. I'm a co-active Life Compass coach and spiritual mentor, and I was trained by master coaches from the Coaches Training Institute. If you want to know more about my process and how you can work with me, feel free to visit my website at lifecompasscoaching.ca, or you can visit me on Facebook at Life Compass Coaching. So before we begin, let's follow in the wise words of the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. For today's show, let's just smile and breathe and go slowly. So tonight's show, Digital Addiction, or what I call the Interrupted Life. The architect Max Fritsch said, technology is the knack of so arranging the world that we don't have to experience it. So now, according to a 2012 survey by the Pew Research Center, 46% of all American adults now own a smartphone, and that's up 25% from 2011. Another study done through the Harvard Business School found that 70% said they check their smartphones within an hour of getting up in the morning. 56% check their phones within an hour of going to sleep. 48% check their phones all weekend long. 51% check continuously during vacations. And 44% said they would experience a great deal of anxiety if they lost their phone and couldn't replace it for a week. So the amount of time people are spending with new technology, the apparent preoccupation raises the question, why? And when you start to see that people are texting while they're driving, even though they clearly know they're endangering their lives and the lives of others, when you see parents on their smartphones texting while playing with their kids at the playground, it means we really need to make a full stop and ask ourselves, as individuals and as a society, what's actually happening to us? And the bare bones truth is addiction is built in to the digital revolution. It's built into your smartphone. It's built into your Facebook page. It's built into your computer. And why is this? Well, psychologists call it the variable ratio reinforcement. That is, we never know when we'll get a satisfying email, so we keep checking over and over again. It's kind of like playing the slots in Vegas. Once you start, you just can't seem to stop. Even when you know your chances of winning the jackpot are almost impossible. And the funny thing is that people aren't really addicted to smartphones themselves or Facebook. They're addicted to checking, and that develops with phone and computer use. They're addicted to checking for news updates, checking for emails, social media connections, new videos to watch, new photos to share. And we know that certain environmental triggers, one of the big ones, like being bored, triggers the habit. So checking for something has become the habit. And while the average user checks his or her smartphone 35 times a day for about 30 to 60 seconds each time, by the way, this is considered a very conservative figure. We can now understand that our smartphones are kind of like our drug dealers. They're hooking users into some type of dependency because in a way they're like psychoactive drugs. That is, they alter your mood and they often will trigger what you perceive to be an enjoyable feeling. Although over the long run, people find they get less and less pleasure out of this kind of stuff. They, in fact, just can't stop doing it. And you know, if you talk to a majority of folks out there, they'll openly admit they don't really even enjoy a lot of the aspects of social media. They just somehow think they might miss out on something big, or they just slowly become slaves to the habit, you know, one update at a time. And now just a reminder, a habit is a choice that we deliberately make at some point and then stop thinking about it, but continue doing it often every day. So put another way, a habit is a formula our brain automatically follows. We create a loop. And I did a whole show on creating new habits, the power of habits. So you can always check my website if you want to listen to that show. So for every hour that you spend on digital communications or entertainment, you know, texting, Facebook, YouTube, etc., Stanford University says a half hour of meaningful face-to-face interaction is lost. And most of us out there are feeling the disconnection. Families are definitely feeling the disconnection. And most people are feeling too rushed and too overwhelmed with information and activities to have even simple, meaningful conversations with those they love the most. And now some recent brain research by UCLA professor Gary Small reports that digital technology is influencing how we think, and it's altering how we feel. It's altering the way we behave and the way our brain functions. And in his book, iBrain, which is worth reading, he writes that while the brains of today's people are wiring up for these rapid-fire cyber searches, the neural circuits that control the more traditional learning methods in our brains are neglected, and they gradually become diminished. So the pathways for human interaction and communication weaken as one-on-one skills atrophy. So obviously the implications for all of us are very clear. And we increasingly see a new younger generation that seems to know less and less about real human interaction because they're in fact having less and less of them. You know, now smartphones, of course, allow us to seek rewards, you know, including videos and Twitter feeds and news updates and email, anytime, anywhere. So, you know, the logical question is this behavior unhealthy? And inherently the answer is no. It's neither healthy nor unhealthy. Because like all habits, it really depends on whether you can find a healthy boundary around it. But what I am noticing more and more as a coach and mentor is that people are being taken over by their technology. It's starting to rule their lives. They're showing up with digital addictions that are, frankly, as powerful as addictions to drugs or alcohol. So you have to ask yourself, is my digital life disrupting my family life? Is it interrupting having real relationships with real people that are not on a computer screen? Is it affecting your work life? Or has your work life and your personal life blurred into one continuous jumble because you never stop looking at your phone? You know, it's kind of a funny joke, but there's the story of the friend that goes out for lunch with his best friend, and he ignores his best friend so he can take pictures of the food they're eating in the restaurant and then send a status update in telling his network how much he's enjoying having lunch with his friend. And it's kind of absurd, isn't it? But it's a fitting metaphor. And if you're checking your phone while you're on holiday, for example, it's a pretty good sign you've lost the knowledge of how to enjoy and relax and find simple pleasure. And another sort of interesting idea around the digital world is the level of unimportant stuff that's starting to escalate to the point where it's almost silly. There's literally so much energy being devoted to sharing the most trivial of ideas. So much so that we're actually almost drowning as a society in the trivial, when in fact there are so many pressing needs and ideas in our world that need to be addressed around equality and poverty, the environment, war, the safety and security of food. These are some very pressing issues in our time. Now, of course, I'm not suggesting we should stop posting anything that isn't serious. I mean, nobody likes to post, you know, videos of my dog swimming more than me, but they're pretty inspiring. But what I am saying is we all know those serial posters, you know, those people, your friend, you've got them on your friends list. They post like 10,000 self-help quotes a day. And at some point, you know, we just start to zone out. It's just like we become zombies. And it's this notion that information is enough, that more and more information is enough, that if you just get enough information to find what you're looking for, you'll be okay. You know, and that starts to get really dangerous. We can get a lot of information from our computers, and our communication systems are getting better and better. And people are saying, I don't have to think. Information will make my decision for me. But what that does is completely rules out creatively using the information, say, in a different way or a new way. And now on the flip side, of course, technology is playing a very important role, I would say, in creating massive social change. But frankly, it's like any tool. It's how we use it, not the tool itself. So we can use our phones and our internet to destroy ourselves or to create a new world. You know, that's really up to us. Another thing I see is that there's an increasing amount of sort of subtle societal peer pressure, whether it's from work colleagues or friends, to be connected at all times. In fact, many folks who sell marketing for a living want to convince you that if you don't spend all day on your social media strategy, you'll become a dinosaur and irrelevant overnight. So there's actually a lot of fear around being a part of all this. And it sort of can progress really quickly to the point where people are checking their Facebook page 200 times. But what happens when a distressed colleague shows up, or a friend, or your spouse, and they need you, but your attention isn't there because you're so busy looking at your phone or checking an update? We see this again and again. So people are also feeling increasingly stressed by the fact that everyone else seems to be connected 24/7. So what's wrong with me if I'm not? So people start to mimic bad behavior. Now, I would say clearly we're at the tipping point of a serious dysfunction, if not an addiction to the technology in our lives. And we're almost being bullied into becoming addicted to all this stuff, as if somehow our smartphones and our Facebook and our Twitter are going to create happy, healthy lives for us. And I'm here to tell you that's impossible. You know, escape and enjoyment is something we all do, whether it's watching movies or listening to a concert or vegging out on the hammock, surfing the web, catching up with our Facebook page. It's relaxing to take our minds off the day-to-day grind. You know, it helps lift our spirits, recharges ourselves. But this is telling what's coming down the pipe for us. They're calling it internet use disorder, and it's going to be listed as a condition recommended for further study, it says, in the forthcoming 2013 May edition of the Mental Health Encyclopedia, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Yeah, that sounds like a good read. Not really. So many people, including myself, are beginning to suggest that things like smartphones are the tether that pull us into a future that may not be particularly healthy. Because subconsciously we're waiting for that message, we're waiting for that post or that feedback that will make our world all right again. And it's becoming a dependency, a reactive state that leaves us kind of ultimately dissatisfied. We're just dependent on getting the next message, the next piece of feedback, as if we'll somehow disappear. We won't exist anymore if we don't get it. So what happens is there's a byproduct to this. We find ourselves not wanting to take any chances to be where we are with our complete and mindful attention on our current surroundings. For fear, you know, we might be missing something out in the cyber world So this wireless world now has a cord that's literally plugged into our brains, which is kind of an interesting metaphor in this wireless world, that we actually have more and more wires tethered to us at every moment. It's kind of like technology has become a dark hole and we're so desperate to try and fill it up. But, you know, no amount of emails and voice messages and phone calls and texts keep us in a state of abundant awareness. Only the presence of mind that we have, and only our courage to be here now, actually can free us. So I guess I would sum up digital addiction as it's like someone who's dying of thirst and all they have is salt water to drink. It's water, but no matter how much you drink it, you can never quench your thirst. You need fresh water for that. And the analogy is you need to support your life in ways that don't just rely on your technology. So let's look at some simple strategies and meditations on, let's say, cutting the umbilical cord of attachment to our digital devices to help us find balance in this completely new world we're living in. And I'm going to offer that some of the people listening to this will find some of these things very challenging to do. And for some people, they'll find it impossible. They'll just say, this isn't possible. So what I've noticed as a coach and a mentor is the more impossible things are for you, the deeper you are into the addiction. But I want you to try this one day. Switch off your phone for an hour in the middle of your day and practice being present without the urge to check your phone or email messages. Now, if you work at home, you're somebody like me, you know, who doesn't work out of a specific office, you might even light a candle. You could practice doing some deep breathing in and out on a count of five, just looking at your surroundings, naming the things you see. I see a book. I see a picture. I see the trees outside. The breathing and even the awareness helps you to get back into real time, into the present moment, and in the space you're meant to be, which is where you are and not where you think you should be. It's also a chance to notice all of the objects in your life and how they relate to you. It's almost like we've decided only phones matter to us anymore and computers. But we're in relationship with our entire world. Now, if you're at an office and you can't light a candle and do all that because people will think you've gone insane, you could take a 10-minute walk with no device on your body, no way for anyone to contact you. You could go outside and have a conversation with a stranger about what you're doing and see what shows up. The point is, we have to stop convincing ourselves that the world will end if we unplug every once in a while. Nicholas Carr, the author of Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brain, said the smartphone, through its small size, ease of use, proliferation of free or cheap apps, and constant connectivity, changes our relationship with computers in a way that goes well beyond what we ever imagined. That's because people keep their smartphones near them from the moment they wake up until the moment they go to bed. And throughout that time, the devices provide an almost continuous stream of messages and alerts and beeps, as well as easy access to a myriad of compelling, yet often completely unnecessary information. It's an environment of almost constant interruptions and distractions. So we could say the smartphone, more than any other gadget, steals from us the opportunity to maintain our attention, to engage in contemplation and reflection, or even to be alone with our own thoughts. He's written extensively in The Shallows about the way that computer technology in general may be diminishing our ability to concentrate and to actually think deeply. So I highly recommend it. It's a book worth reading. So now people are saying, so you want me to give up my phone? No, I'm not telling you that. But here's what I'm saying. Can you do this? Can you be conscious of the situations and emotions that make you want to check your phone? Is it boredom? Is it loneliness? Is it anxiety? You know, maybe there's another antidote for that. Another thing is just to practice being strong, you know. It's like lifting your mental weight. When the phone beeps or rings, you don't always have to answer it. In fact, you can avoid the temptation by turning off, you know, the ringer. And now, obviously, you have to take it with a grain of salt. There are times when you may need to be glued to your phone. That's fine. But there are lots of times when you don't need your phone. And so it's a mental practice to not answer it or turn it off. And maybe the most important thing is to be disciplined, as I call it, intermittent fasting. Be disciplined about not using your device in certain situations. When you're with your children, don't use your phone. When you're driving, don't use your phone. When you're in a meeting, don't use your phone. Or at certain hours. Let's say between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. Don't use your phone. I'm going to offer you'll be surprised and pleased to discover or rediscover the simple pleasure of being unplugged for a while. The world won't end. The fact is you've just been brainwashed. You've forgotten what it feels like. There was actually a group of business people at a Boston consulting firm that discovered that when they participated in an experiment. The group found that taking regular, what they call predictable time off from their PDAs resulted in increased efficiency and collaboration, heightened job satisfaction, and better work-life balance. And actually, 4 years after the initial experiment, 86% of the consulting staff in their offices in Boston, New York, and Washington were still engaged in similar practices. So it clearly works. There's more simple ways to manage your smartphone, you know, using incremental change. So you start by not checking it for 5 minutes, then 10, then 15, 30, then you go to an hour, unless you're dealing with an urgent situation. Another great thing is to avoid using the web browsers on your smartphones. Stop surfing the web on them unless you truly need some vitally important information. This is a radical one, but disconnect from Facebook on your phone. Get rid of the Facebook app. Swear off social media on your phone entirely. And I can tell you the result that even after a few days of this self-discipline, you'll find you're concentrating better, you're more aware of your surroundings, and you're more relaxed. And you're beginning to use the phone as a tool, not as a distraction. Please get the phone out of the bedroom and family room. It doesn't belong there. You know, send your last email of the night and leave your phone in your office or on a kitchen table or somewhere where you can't grab it. You know, there's other ways to unwind from your day other than technology. There's books. Or spending time with a significant other, or a walk, playing with the dog, turning the lights down, lighting some candles. Also, I know people are not going to like this, but think twice before you share. Thinking twice saves your followers from a constant stream of pointless posts, and it saves you from notifications every time someone likes or doesn't like or tweets or retweets or... and let's face it, if you post a little less often, you'll get the attractive air of mystery, like, that James Bond kind of thing. I recommend people keep their devices on silent after work hours, you know. When you're home making dinner and you're trying to unwind, you don't need to be buzzed every 14 seconds, you know, with your phone telling you something's happened. You know, by keeping it on silent, you might even forget it's there for a while. And when you forget it's there, it means you don't need it as bad as you think you do. And if you're in the same room having a conversation with a human being, you know, don't check your phone. That can wait. It's pretty hard to feel valued when the person you're conversing with has their attention in a small black box instead of you. And I can assure you, you won't be lying on your deathbed as an old person wishing, I wish I'd spent more time texting. I wish I'd spent more time checking my emails. You'll be lamenting the relationships you didn't cultivate because you were too busy with unimportant trifles. As I said, use your phone as a tool, not as a distraction device. You know, you can enjoy being in the world and looking around to see what's going on. You don't have to fill every moment with a distraction. Because if you do, you're training your mind to want more and more distractions. You know, we're social creatures, so it's natural that we look to socialize online. But it's a superficial socializing, with a comment here and a like there and a message or two. It lacks the richness of a one-on-one session with a good friend or a workout or a walk in the park. Now, we're increasingly online socializing a lot, but do we also fear being alone at the same time? Is there something scary in that? You know, an empty inbox? Or are we bored to death with without checking Facebook? Are we bored to death without all these things we have to check? You know, so can we disconnect and face that fear of being by ourselves without distractions? For some people, it's a terrifying thought, you know, to go for a day without going to Facebook or any other social media sites. A whole day? To go a whole day without an email or a text message? You know, take a day off, disconnect, create, reflect, journal. Sketch, brainstorm, walk, sit alone, meditate, read a book. Take a day off without any electronics and see what happens. Solitude can be scary, but there's something incredibly valuable in our own companionship. You know, there's a paradox about the online experience. Many people use the internet to connect, and yet repeatedly studies are finding a strong correlation between depression and the amount of time spent online. Now, there's always the question of what came first, but there's good evidence to suggest that people who spend too much time in front of a computer screen can become depressed, more depressed than they were to begin with. Now, obviously, the computer is a valuable tool for many things, but too much screen time may cause more problems for people. And one theory is that it lacks limbic resonance. And limbic resonance refers to the energetic exchange that happens between two people who are interacting in a caring and safe relationship. The interaction stimulates the release of certain petrochemicals in the limbic region of the brain. And these chemicals are necessary for a full emotional and physical well-being. So without enough of this limbic resonance in our lives, over time we function and feel less and less well, less and less connected. And you see that out there in the world. That's why more and more people are taking pharmaceuticals. They're just feeling less and less alive. As adults, we become depressed and anxious without enough limbic resonance in our lives. And as newborns, we may even die if we're not held or loved, or grow up to suffer a plethora of problems from lack of love at a very early age. You know, we can't just think of ourselves as these self-regulating units, machines. We're regulated through our healthy interactions with those we feel safe and close with. So what might be the problem with seeking to satisfy this need online? The problem is that the online experience doesn't appear to stimulate this limbic resonance, at least not in the degree that we needed as humans. And if you consider our history as social animals, it's only in this digital age that all these people are trying to meet all these needs through screens. You know, in face-to-face daily encounters, we see and hear and touch and smell and feel one another. It's our natural way to be. You know, our bodies and our minds are designed for this. And so the evidence is mounting that we need to follow our natural design more. So what happens when people turn to the digital media as an escape? You know, in a virtual world, it's people can find all kinds of things they probably couldn't find in the real world. It's easy to find online friendships. It's easy to find all kinds of things where skills are needed in the outside world to be successful. So I would offer that everyone look at their digital life as they would with other important aspects of their life and make sure that you can find strategies for a healthy way to keep it balanced. And I advise everyone to make sure that you and those you care about are getting enough of this limbic or emotional resonance in their life through the real world, face-to-face contact, through identifying what is really important to you and in your life, to live your values, to honor your values, and perhaps to work with a coach or a mentor at periods in your life to keep everything in a healthy perspective. Then you can enjoy the online world without suffering all of the downsides. There's no doubt technology is going to play an important role in your life, but don't let it become another addiction, or it just starts to turn you into a slave. And you know what? It can't replace a hug from a child. It can't replace watching the sunset with your partner. It can't replace just a deep, beautiful conversation with a friend or a mentor. It can't replace the feeling of walking on a beach with your toes nestled in the sand, or a walk in a mountain field. So get really clear on what technology does offer you and what it can do for you. And at the same time, be really honest with yourself about its limitations and what it will never be able to provide. And I think you've got the beginning of developing a really healthy strategy for maneuvering in this new world we live in of constant connection. Connection's important, but it's equally important to disconnect every once in a while and really reconnect with the things that are really, really valuable and important in your life. Now, if you want to know more about me and my work and what I do as a coach and a mentor, please feel free to visit my website, lifecompasscoaching.ca. You can also visit my Facebook page, Life Compass Coaching, and I would love to hear from you what you do to keep balance in the digital madness. And don't forget, you can listen in every day to amazing coaches from around the globe talking on a variety of subjects. So tune in to the Life Coach Radio Network, and you can use technology to your advantage. Okay, folks, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Keep well, and I will see you again here in 2 weeks. Okay, good night.